All right, let's do this. Greetings. This is like, whoa, what did I just do? God, I'm just fucking up left and right. This is a continuation of the previous episode of Stating the Obvious. With some other stuff thrown in. Oh, you can scream, shout, whine, cry, snivel, piss, moan, look for a safe space. Dig in your heels and hold on tight. You can shove your opinions up your ass, so either Trump and Fuhrer's cock has something to keep it company. Either you are wrong, or I am right. Don't forget, my friends and my enemies, the ever-present, the most likely, the third possibility, you are wrong and I am right. Go fuck yourself.
Yes, I hear you. That's where it's at.
We spent the previous episode listening to science prove all the things that I already knew here at Stating the Obvious, the weapons platform from which I launched the prism of my intellect and self-destruct and states all over the world. Yes. Greetings. Don't forget, I'm right. I've always been right. I will always be right. I have never been wrong. I know, it was offensive to your little feels, but it's okay. Everybody's hanging there. All right. We got the second scientific study to delve into. It's not going to take the entire episode, though, so let me knock out a couple of other things. Unfortunately, none of which are cute little 18-year-olds. We're just going to go downhill from there. Yes, yes, science, thank you for telling me that girls go down in sexual value as they get older. I'd have never figured that out were it not for scientific research. All right, just assorted stories. Because they say unto the great one, they say, well, great one, without the government, who would build the roads? And great one, without the government, where would libraries come from? And some people, of course, say, well, we don't need libraries because of the internet, except, of course, that the internet was invented by the government. Specifically, it was invented by Al Gore. So everything comes from the government, according to the statist. Well, in fact, one of the ways that without the government we would have libraries is the way we do, in fact, have libraries here in the People's Republic of Fort Collins. We have these things called something-something. I actually don't know what they're officially called. But it's a post, and it's got a little box on the top of it with a door that opens up, and it's you know, a little closed. Language skills, goddammit. Language fucking skills. Can we just fucking talk? It's an enclosed box with a glass door on the front. So you can look through the door and you unlatch the door and you open it up because it's a door. That's what doors do, right? They open on hinges. And there's a couple of these scattered around town. There's one in Old Town. There's actually one, interestingly enough, on one of the hiking and biking trails that goes through town. It's like, it's near a major road, but it's not like right on the major road, it's down on the trail itself that goes under the road. It's kind of just out there in this field. And these little boxes, people just put books in it. You just put some books in there, you see a book you like, you take the book out. I brewed up another mug of tea. Considering a gin and tonic, but I went with tea. So the great one, achieved his financial goal of $82 in order to buy the little Supergirl statue that I wanted to buy. So I go on the fucking Amazon to buy the Supergirl statue, and the statue is now $92, not $82. Price went up. That goddamn capitalism. Fucking supply and demand. This is bullshit. And since I had actually raised $84, I said, screw it, I ate the other $8, and I ordered the Supergirl, which should be here, in theory, if you believe the tracking information, tomorrow, which tomorrow will actually be 2 days ago when you hear this podcast. So Monday, the 20th. I think it's the 20th. Ow. Hey, there's a microphone there. Yes, the 20th. So this put me into dilemma territory because, all right, so now I got to figure out what am I going to do with this thing? Because I already have more shit than I need around here. I'm trying to get rid of shit. I'm still getting rid of shit. It's like no matter how much shit I get rid of, there's still more shit. It's probably my fault for buying more books. So I'm looking at my bookshelves. So I'm like, well, all right, I'm going to have to clear a shelf off because I got the other Supergirl statue, the one I bought down in Dallas. Like, all right. I gotta clear a shelf off and make a space for these. So I'm gonna do that. So I'm shuffling shit around. I'm pulling shit out, and I found a bunch of three-ring binders on the bookshelf that all this time I thought they had stuff in them. And I pull them out, and they're empty. I'm like, oh, well, that's an easy fix. Great. And then I did some stuff here, and I pulled some books out, and I put these in the pile. Okay, I'm gonna read these in the near future because they're short story collections. I like short stories. I'm a big fan of short stories. Because with the collection of short stories, you start reading the story. If it sucks, you jump ahead to the next one, right? Okay, great. So I put those over there. So I'm getting the I'm shuffling some shit around. I'm getting the shelf cleared off. I'm going, all right, I got to get rid of some books. It's painful, but it's time for me to make some tough choices here. So I went through and I found some books. I'm like, okay, I'm never going to read this. And I'm over this. And this is done. So I took the books. And this is what I do with all the books I own that I read and then I don't want to hold on to for reading again. I took them to the little free library box. And I'm putting them in there. And I'm looking in the box and there's almost nothing ever in the box that I would read. It is very satisfying to go by the box and look in there and see the books that I put in there are gone. Which means either some leftist took them and burned them or it means somebody's reading them. So I look in the box today, and I saw a copy of Atlas Shrugged. I'm like, all right, way to go, man. And this is not the first time. And one would think, and this would be natural for you to think this, I mean, I would think this myself, you would think that this little free library box thing would be very leftist-oriented, because this is the kind of thing lefties would do. But I have seen actually quite a few. This is not the first time I've seen an Ayn Rand book in there, and I have seen other, like Rush Limbaugh, I've seen, what's his face, Sean Hannity books in there. And I'm like, oh, hey, Ayn Rand, cool. I'm just about to close the door and walk away. I notice this thin paperback book that has the whole price on it, 50 cents. Remember when paperback books were 50 cents as opposed to $12? And I looked at it, and I did a double take, and I said, no fucking way. And sure enough, it is. I'm like, fuck me, Running Rachel. I have in my hand paperback copy of Doctor Strangelove. Or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. Yes, my friends, it's Dr. Strangelove, the novelization of the movie that Aaron Cleary still hasn't fucking seen. Because, I don't know, he's a pussy! Something. Dr. Strangelove novel. I'm not joking to you. The smile on my, I just lit up. right? It's like a chick. When you walk up to a chick and you say something nice about her shoes, the way they light up, because women agonize over their shoes, right? It's like, oh my God, I gotta get the right shoes. This is a big deal for chicks. Probably shouldn't tell you that and give this information away for free. Shoes, big deal. I lit up like a chick in a shoe store when there's a buy one, get nine free sale going on. Oh, man. All right. So you got Dr. Strangelove novel. And it's short. I mean, that's what she said, just not to me. It's only 145 pages long. I'm going to sit down and read that sometime because I have not watched the movie in a while. What else is on my list here, stuff to talk about? How am I doing? Speaking of movies, The Foreigner. I told you guys about The Foreigner, which I only watched because, back to Aaron Clary, whose opinions on movies we really shouldn't take because he hasn't seen Dr. Strangelove. But this one time, you know, there's everybody's right once, and even Aaron Clary can occasionally be right about something. He praised The Foreigner. He said it was a good movie. And so I watched it specifically because he said it was a good movie. And he was right. Damn, man, I highly recommend The Foreigner. Here's the two things I'll tell you about this movie without giving anything away. First of all, everybody is fucking everybody, both literally and figuratively. There's so many. You're just sitting there watching. Okay, and then oh shit, and oh that person, and that oh that person, and that person, oh that person, he did that. Oh, it's great. The other thing about it is nice use of the surveillance state, especially since it takes place in London. You know, there's cameras everywhere, and the cell phone tracking, and all this other stuff rears its ugly little head. Really good movie. Highly, highly, highly recommended. Speaking of restaurants, there's a lot of reasons I don't like going to restaurants. One of them is the fact that you never really know where your food is going and when's the last time that person ever washed their hands and whether or not anything is clean. And I'm not a germ freak, okay? Not to the extent of some people, but I think I am worse than other people. Like when I'm preparing food, I wash my hands a lot. Like I touch the carrots and I wash my hands, and I touch the meat and I wash my hands, and then you know, I pick up the knife and I rinse the knife off, and I cut the meat up and I throw it in, and I rinse the knife off and I wash my hands, and then I cut up the carrots. Yeah, and like a little particle of dirt or something is not going to kill you. So I'm not that extreme, but I do think I am more attentive to these things than the average person. Such as the one girl I dated for a while, the Jewish vet student whom I dated for 2 years. We'd buy vegetables and we'd go home to cook, and she would just like chop them up and throw them in the pan or whatever. And I'm like, you didn't even wash that. You don't need to wash it. You're cooking it. The cooking it will kill the germs. I'm like, eh. All right, she'd cut open a watermelon, right? She wouldn't wash the exterior of the watermelon. She just cut through it. She said, well, but you're not eating the outside. I'm like, no, but the knife is making contact with the outside. And then the knife passes through the watermelon and anything you picked up on the knife from the outside of the watermelon, which everybody and their grandmother has touched and has rolled across the floor and has been shit on by birds and all this other stuff, all of that gets on the blade of the knife. The knife goes through the watermelon and now it's on the meat of the watermelon, and then you're going to eat it. And she's like rolling her eyes and stuff. And I told this to a woman who is a professional cook, and the professional cook says, no, you're absolutely right. I'm like, thank you. Thank you. I know this, but thank you for the validation. So anyway, that's why you don't date Jewish vet students, except when they're really hot. Talking about in the previous episode, talking about leagues, she was out of my league. So I'm at the Ginger Baker place I've told you guys about. They have the pie and the shitty coffee. I'm at the Ginger Baker place, and I'm sitting there in the coffee shop side, and they've got the jug of water. They put the water in there and the ice and, you know, whatever, the gay little cucumber slices or what the shit ever. And so when you want some water, you, instead of asking the barista, hey, can you give me a glass of water, you have to go over there and get your own water. So it's self-serve. Once again, this is why I don't tip. If I have to go get my own fucking water, you should not be expecting a tip, honey. And the water jug is this transparent, it's kind of acorn shaped. So the top, I'm trying to think how to describe it. You know, the top like rolls in and there's the lid, and the lid is smaller. So you unscrew the lid and the diameter of the opening is say 6 inches, but the diameter of the entire vessel is say 14 inches. So anyhow, the girl is refilling the water jug, and to transport it, she unscrews the lid, she reaches inside with her hand and like grabs the four fingers on the inside of the water jug, and she carries it over to the sink and refills it, and she sticks her hand back inside of it and carries it back over and sits it down and puts the lid back on. And I'd been sitting here for a while, and I know for a fact she hadn't washed her hands since the entire time I'd been in there. Now everything on her hands is inside the water jar. Now see, that drives me insane. Absolutely fucking insane. And this is why, and you're going to make fun of me. It's okay. It's okay. When I go to restaurants, I take my own fucking water bottle from home. My God. Fuck. Then, oh, we're not done yet. This guy comes in and he needs a cup of hot tea for one of the tables, right? And the barista girl is juggling things around, and she like gives him the tea bag, and then she hands him the cup of the hot water, and he's got something else going on. And I forget what the third thing was. Okay, so visualize this. You got the teacup in your right hand, okay? The saucer and the teacup on it filled with hot water. He's got that in his right hand. In his left hand, he's got the tea bag, but he needs another hand to do something else. So he takes the tea bag. It's just the naked tea bag. It's not in a wrapper. It's the naked tea bag. He takes the tea bag. He flops it up against his shirt on his chest. He takes his right arm, short sleeve shirt, so his bare skin. He puts his arm against the tea bag itself, to hold it. Then that allows him to let go of the string on the tea bag, like the string on the tampon, to do whatever he did with his left hand. He then comes back, grabs the string on the tea bag, extracts it, and drops it in the cup of hot water. I'm just like, oh my God. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you people? And then my other favorite one, when people bring you the drink in the glass and they grab the glass right at the very top with their hand, which they haven't washed in hours, they grab it right at the top where you're going to put your fucking lips. And that's why I always ask for a fucking straw. Let me rag on Waffle Lab. As in Waffle Lab, one of my favorite restaurants, the other day, and they bring the food out and the plate is dirty. I called the girl over. I said, did you guys not have any clean plates or what? And she says like, oh, well, we'll give you a 20% discount for that. How about if you just put it on a clean plate? I mean, is that so fucking hard? There's like leftover food caked onto the side, not the top of the plate, the side of the top. Right, the top of the plate where the food goes. It wasn't like right under my food, but it was beside my food. And it's not like a little fucking flake either. I'm talking about, it was like 2 square inches worth of leftover food. I mean, how do you not see this? Oh, wait. You have a fucking liberal arts degree. That's how you don't see it. All right, we got that out of the way. Got that out of my system. Let me do this one. I watched a Black Pigeon Speaks video. I watch a fair number of his videos. He does good stuff. And he was talking about Facebook and Apple and YouTube and all this other stuff. And of course, there's this whole controversy now going on with the censorship and everything is, are these private companies and can they censor anyone they want? Or are they public platforms? You know, are they publishers or whatever? Do they have a, and look, you know, I get it. I get it. There's the debate and we don't really know. And this is one of the big problems of the interwebs. I talk about this fairly regularly, especially with copyright. You know, you want to cling to your fucking copyright laws, but once you put something on the internet, by virtue of putting it on the internet, it can be reproduced over and over and over infinitely. And good luck enforcing your fucking copyright laws. And it's time to just grow up and kind of move beyond some of this shit. I don't know exactly how to move beyond it yet, because it's not my fucking job to figure this out. But clinging to the old shit is not going to work. And so there is the debate. Is Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and so forth, are they private or are they public? Can they censor whoever they want, or do they need to let people say what they want to say regardless, right? Blah, yada, yada, yada. You know the fucking debate. I don't need to explain it to you. There are those, and I would count myself in this camp, who argue that these are private companies, and therefore, like it or not, they can censor anybody they want to, and you can stop using them. Well, Black Pigeon made a good counterpoint. Black Pigeon pointed out that these companies were, at least to some extent, financed by the taxpayers. You know, Google got some loan apparently to start a server farm, and this did this and this did, and the specifics don't matter that much because regardless of how you cut it, this is true. He talked about like companies getting tax breaks. I remember hearing about how Amazon was looking for a place to open another headquarters or something, and they're all about, we need a place that's diverse and is tolerant and has lots of pedophiles and other weird people, because that's what we care about, is the LGBTKKK plus. The plus stands for pedophile community, right? And so all of these governments, local governments, are throwing the cookie of tax breaks in front of them. Just like they do with all these sports stadiums. We'll give you a tax break. You build your sports stadium here, okay? You know, tax breaks, that is taxpayer funding. You say, well, wait a minute, great one. If they're not paying taxes, how is that taxpayer funding? Well, because the taxpayers are still paying the taxes. Okay? And if something costs $200, and let's say I pay $100 in taxes and you pay $100 in taxes, and the $200 item is bought with our tax money. Okay, we both paid for that. Now let's say I pay $100 in taxes and you only pay $50 in taxes because, I don't know, you have a football stadium or you have a child. This whole writing children off on your income tax thing fucking pisses me off. Or, you know, your YouTube or whatever. Okay, so now there's $150. The thing costs $200. Where's that other $50 going to come from? It's got to come from somewhere, because it's not like the government's not going to spend the $200. So the government just goes into debt for the other $50, buys the $200 thing anyway. Now I, as a taxpayer, have to pay off that debt. So tax breaks, that's a government subsidy. A tax break is a government subsidy, just like the fucking government just giving these companies money to do shit. So Black Pigeon made his assertion was, look, these companies have all gotten this shit tons of government money. Without all of that government money, they would not be where they are. Thus, they are not private companies in the sense that people say they are. And I'm thinking about that, and I'm like, okay, that's legit. I'm having a hard time arguing with his logic. And once again, I've said that if you're going to, this is just like with the welfare, which this is what this is. It's welfare. It is welfare. Getting a tax break, right? You put your football stadium in this city and they give you a tax break. Okay, that is welfare. The difference between that and giving a black woman with 7 children from 6 baby daddies food stamps is zero. There is no fucking difference. I know that's probably pissing a couple of you off to hear that. I don't give a shit. You didn't fucking come here to get your feelings coddled. You came here for the truth. There's no fucking difference between those two circumstances. A tax break is welfare, just like motherfucking food stamps. The great one has said for a long time, people who are on welfare, they should have to work. If you are receiving any kind of welfare, this is the plan. In fact, maybe when I become president of the United States in 2024, maybe this is going to be one of my fucking platforms. Maybe this is going to be one of the things that I implement. Boy said, and now especially with cell phones, you could digitally do this. However you do it. You're on welfare. You get food stamps. You get unemployment. You get, unemployment. You get just the welfare. You get your Section 8 housing, whatever, right? You should have to work for people who pay taxes certain number of hours per week. So you're on food stamps? All right. That's 15 hours a week. Where anyone who pays taxes, and we'll be the people, we'll designate ourselves, we will wear top hats, okay? And if you are on food stamps, then you'll have to wear, I don't know, like a yellow star on your clothes so we can see you and say, oh, look, they're on food stamps. And then I can walk up to you and say, you are on food stamps, I pay taxes, I need you to come and clean my lawn, clean up my yard for me. You need to rake the lawn, and you're going to pick up the sticks, and you're going to do some other little chores. You're going to work for me for 1 hour. And unless you've already worked your 15 hours that week, your options are you can say yes, or you can give up food stamps. Some of you think I'm joking about this. I'm not. If you're on welfare, you should be required to work for people who pay taxes and thus pay your welfare. Well, Facebook and Twitter, and they're all on welfare. And if they're going to be on welfare, they should not be censoring anybody who pays taxes. And I thought about it, and I'm like, all right, you know what? Black Pigeon has a point. I think I'm changing my position on this. I'm changing my stance. Then, of course, Black Pigeon, like every other statist on the planet Earth, says, and the solution to this is we need more laws. I'm like, oh, God, nobody fucking listens. Nobody learns. Yes, the solution to the fact that Facebook is censoring people and continues to receive welfare money from the government is that we need more laws. The possibility of turning off the fucking welfare. Well, no, we can't do that. We got to keep giving Facebook tax breaks. Oh, we can't turn off the fucking welfare to Facebook. We can't turn off welfare to Google. I don't know what welfare they're currently getting. I could type something into Google and maybe find out. It doesn't fucking matter. They've got the welfare in the past. I'm sure they're getting tax breaks. I'm sure that local governments are kissing their asses beyond belief. The solution is not to make laws forcing Facebook to bake cakes for homosexual people. Forcing Facebook to let conservatives on their platform. Isn't that fascinating? How we live in a country where you can have laws that will force you to bake a cake for a homosexual couple. But we can't have a law forcing Facebook to let you express your opinion. But the solution isn't laws. The solution is turn off the welfare. Jared Howe, now that I think about this too, on one of his podcasts, he made an interesting point about this whole scenario. What with the Facebook and the YouTube censoring people and having all these people coming in and enforcing community standards and all this other shit, he made the point, think about how much money these companies are spending to enforce the censorship. I'm like, hey, that's an interesting point too. I mean, okay, so hopefully they are spending a lot of money to enforce this censorship. The problem is, though, they're still just going to keep getting more government welfare. Anyhow, we'll see. I mean, we will see how it all plays out, if I can talk. I don't know how it's going to play out. I know how it should play out. The welfare should be turned off. We'll see what happens in reality as time goes by. I have no predictions on this. I don't know how the fuck it's going to go. All right. Speaking of fucking, let us go back to where we were. Where is this? Can't even really call it an article. By Arwa Mwadawi and her fur baby. Okay. So remember, men are attracted to emotionally unstable women, preferably no older than 18. Remember, there's nothing on here that says men. Again, listen to this thing. We talked about this. We talked about how this study found what we already knew, that women are most attractive at 18, and from there they just get less and less sexually attractive. From that, she concluded that men are attracted to women who are preferably no older than 18. No, we're just acknowledging that 18 is your peak, okay? This is some serious spin. Then the other one she gets to, so let's see, where the fuck is it? Here it is. Blah, blah, blah. A recent study published in the Journal of Sex Research, no one's ever heard of it, found that, quote, men whose partners had less emotional stability reported better sexual function, unquote. Sounds really healthy, guys, is her editorializing. All right, so this recent study has the sentence, men whose partners had less emotional stability reported better sexual function. So see, once again, that sounds really wife-beaty, right? Like men have better sexual function if their female partners are less emotionally stable. Okay, less emotional stability. Men whose partners had less emotional stability. Then what? Less emotional stability measured how? By whom? In what context? Less than what? The average woman? Less than the man? Less than a fur baby? Once again, start actually thinking about this sentence. You realize there's no information here. These are just words. So let us go to the study. This study is a little more annoying. It's got a lot more bullshitty lingo in it. All right, exploring. Oh my God, it's written by women. Did just now notice that. Exploring the impact of personal and partner traits on sexuality, sexual excitation, sexual inhibition, and big five, predict sexual functions in couples. Excuse me, sexual function. All right, first of all, I didn't do this. Sorry, not prepared. We have to use DuckDuckGo here. And what are the big five personality traits? Okay, more at Wikipedia. It's Wikipedia. Come on, you can do this. You can Google this yourself. Big five personality traits. Yeah. All right, so it's open. The five factors are openness to experience, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism. Critique. We'll zap down to the critique. Has been subjected to scrutiny, blah-de-blah. It's based on blah-de-blah, limited scope, methodological issues, theoretical status. A big criticism is not based on any underlying theory. It is merely an empirical finding that certain descriptors cluster together under factor analysis. Though this does not mean the five factors do not exist, the underlying causes behind them are unknown. Okay, so in order to determine, now remember, let me get back, I gotta find the fucking tab. Men whose partners had less emotional stability measured how? Well, utilizing the big five personality traits. Okay, but the big five personality traits are not particularly empirical in any fucking way. There's a lot of opinion going on with the measurement of those things. Now, let's have a look at this. Abstract. Sexual difficulties are common among women and men and are associated with various mental and physical health problems. And I call my podcast Stating the Obvious. Hey guys, did you know that sexual difficulties are common among women and men? Did you know that many of these men and women, they breathe oxygen? Some of them metabolize oxygen into carbon dioxide. Also, water is wet. And also, right here, these sexual difficulties are associated with various mental and physical health problems. Did you know that? Wait a minute, hold on. I thought fat women were beautiful. How could physical health, that's right, being fat is not a physical health problem. Voting for Donald Trump is probably a mental illness, according to these people. Anyhow, just the mind-boggling statement of obviousness here. Although psychological traits are known to impact sexual attitudes and behavior, hey, did you know that your psychological traits impact your attitudes and behavior? Hey, really? No, really? Your psychology affects your attitudes and your behavior. Did you know that? We are stating some obvious fucking shit here, man. This is science. Once again, my tax money, I guarantee you, actually, maybe not. Hold on. Actually, well, no, my tax money still pay. See, I'm trying not to jump ahead because I wanted to save this. All right, anyway, my tax money still paid for this. Trust me. All right, let's just wait. Deep breath. It gets better. Although psychological traits are known to impact sexual attitudes and behavior, sexuality and personality-related traits have not been jointly investigated to assess their relevance for sexual functioning in couples. Bullshit? You're saying that no one has ever jointly investigated sexually related traits and personally related traits? Wouldn't that be what marriage counseling is all about? Okay. The aim of this study was to investigate how psychological traits of two partner... What? The aim of this study was to investigate how psychological traits of two partners influence women's and men's sexual function. OK, Okay, that was a sentence I just can't fucking read. Data from 964 couples, representative of the adult population in Germany, were analyzed. Germany, one of the most cucked countries in the fucking world at this point, right up there with Sweden. So you see, this study was done on Germans. Nobody from the United States participated. This is about Germans. Did this stupid wall-hitting fucking cunt with her fur baby in her fucking very short article, did she mention men attracted to emotionally unstable women in Germany, a country which is currently opening its borders to every Muslim rapist who wants to come in? No. She left out the entire part about Germany. We did a study in Germany, and she's just decided, you know, and the implication as we get down here, blah, 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 they're another reminder, the crisis in masculinity and the far right is dominated by men. See, she takes this, and while she doesn't say men in the far right are attracted to emotionally unstable women, that is the implication. Because she doesn't tell us that this study was done on people in Germany, and she just flows right through all of this as if being attracted to emotionally unstable women, preferably no older than 18, studies show. She just throws in the studies show, right? And then she blah, 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 and then the far right is dominated by men. And this is what's called journalism. When you're a 40-year-old wall hitter with a fur baby. Sexual function was assessed with the Female Sexual Function Index and the International Index of Erectile Function. I don't know. Blah, blah, blah. Now, personality. Remember, these women are... I got to go back to the fucking tab. What is it? Emotionally unstable. Now, also notice her headline, or her third headline, it says men attracted to emotionally unstable women. To say a woman is emotionally unstable. That is to say something. Okay, so I say to you, this woman is emotionally unstable. In your mind, you form an interpretation of what that means, right? Okay. Now, the actual sentence from the study says, men whose partners had less emotional stability. To say to you a woman has less emotional stability, that forms a different picture than to say the woman is emotionally unstable. Because especially, once again, there's no reference point here. I hate to keep harping on this, but this is why I'm the fucking great one and you're not. This is why when you hear about these scientific studies, you need to go fucking read them and you need to think before you just mindlessly believe shit that is spewed on the fucking internet by some goddamn fucking cunt who's hitting the fucking wall and writes a goddamn thing called The Weak in Patriarchy. Less emotional stability than what? What is the reference point? So there's a huge difference between saying emotionally unstable women and saying women who have less emotional stability than some unknown reference point. Those are two vastly different fucking things if you have brain cells. Okay, if you have a fur baby, I understand how you can't tell the difference. Okay, so however this less emotional stability is measured. Here we go, right here. Personality was measured with self-report and partner-rated versions of the Big Five inventory. So basically, all of these German people, they decided who was emotionally stable and not stable by rating themselves and having their partners rate them. because these people are all fucking professionals and utilizing the Big Five. Well, I think, you know, it's just like, oh, how attractive do you think you are? Oh, I'm a 9 out of 10. Like, no, sweetie, you're a 3. You're overweight, you have tattoos, you have facial piercings. You're a 3. You're not a 9. So it's a bunch of people rating their own personality. Okay, now we're really getting into some serious science. You know, at least if you had some fucking clinician coming in and interviewing these people and making, I mean, even that has biases, but my God, it's self-reporting. It's like when you ask me, great one, how large is your cock? I mean, of course I'm going to tell you 11 inches. This is why self-reporting doesn't fucking work. And I tell you 11 inches because I'm modest. I'm not going to tell you the truth and be like, well, it's 13, because then I'll have women beating down the fucking door. All right, so there's a lot of blah, blah, blah going on here. Okay, partner effects. We consider the effects of partner variables on sexual function. Partner relationship satisfaction was a positive predictor of sexual function among men and women. Once again, let's state some obvious shit. If you're satisfied with the person you're having sex with, if you like them and you get along with them, you're going to have better sex. We needed science to figure this out. In addition, better self-reported health of a sexual partner was predictive of greater sexual function in women, but not in men. Better self-reported health of a sexual partner was predictive of greater sexual function in women, but not men. Women whose partners had high SI, wait, what is SI? Oh, sexual inhibition. Women whose partners had high sexual inhibition reported lower function. Okay. Women whose partners. So if the woman is married to a man who is sexually inhibited, she has lower sexual function. Well, no shit. Like if the guy has erectile dysfunction, he doesn't fuck her as often, therefore she has lower sexual function. Science, thank you. Lower agreeableness of a sexual partner. This is what our fucking feminist friend also, she didn't mention this part. Listen to this. Lower agreeableness of a sexual partner was predictive of better sexual function in women, but not in men. So in women, lower agreeableness of her sexual partner. So if the man, for the woman, if the man is not a beta male, this is a predictor of better sexual function. In other words, women don't like beta males. They don't like men who let them walk all over them. They like strong, independent men who tell women to shut their mouths and go make a pie. Lower agreeableness of a sexual partner was predictive of better sexual function in women, but not in men. That's because men want a partner who is agreeable. This is why I keep telling you, men want women who are pretty and pleasant. It's that simple. We do not want you to argue with us. Okay, partner conscientiousness was a positive predictor of sexual function in women. Women whose partners had less emotional stability reported better sexual function. We still don't know less emotional stability compared to what. However, what measures emotional stability? Being as men don't want women who are non-agreeable, let me put it this way, men want women who are more agreeable. And agreeableness could probably be misinterpreted as well as some kind of less emotional stability. Depending, what's the, how are you measuring all this shit? Nobody fucking knows. Okay. Interestingly, two other personality traits, agreeableness and emotional stability, that have traditionally been found to be positive predictors of sexual-related outcomes, showed negative partner effects in our study. Women whose partners were more agreeable reported lower sexual function. Once again, women whose partners were more agreeable, who were more beta male, reported lower sexual function. To date, the impact of partner responses to women's sexual difficulties has been investigated only in women with genitopelvic pain. God, with research. Now listen to this. With research showing that having a partner who, in other words, she's having her period, okay? With research showing that having a partner who responds with sympathy, attention, and support to a woman's genital pain is associated with greater pain symptoms. This is footnoted. There's a study for this. If the man responds to the woman's period with sympathy, attention, and support, this is associated with the woman having greater pain. I notice our feminist wall hitter left that part out of her little fucking article. However, because the current study was not focused on sexual pain conditions, more research is needed to identify which partner responses are indeed helpful to women who experience other symptoms related to low sexual function. Both agreeableness and emotional stability, however, showed non-significant zero-order correlations with our outcome variable and only become negative predictors when all other variables were controlled for. Stop being a beta male. Once again, we knew this already. This is not news. This is not discovery. This is not science. Women are not attracted to beta males.